This is a business radio show where we talk about the craziness of small business. It's that craziness that actually makes it exciting, interesting, and totally unpredictable. This is Business Insanity Talk Radio with your host, Barry Maltz.
Well, thanks for joining this week's radio show, which is the final word in small business. For those keeping track, this is now show number 392. This episode is provided by Nextiva, the answer to all your business communication solutions in the cloud. Well, a lot of managers think that in order to be a good leader, they have to be very hands-on. One of my guests today thinks the exact opposite is true. The more you try to manage their engagement, the less they actually become engaged. Plus, what have you learned from starting a business? On today's show, we're going to talk to a man that has started over 50 small businesses. But first, it's become too cliche to say that people are any company's most important asset. Unfortunately, most small business owners actually only pay lip service to this, assigning tasks to employees and forgetting about taking care of them as a whole person and also consider their goals. My next guest has a lot of experience in leveraging teams for success. Howard Behar's career spans over 50 years, all in consumer-oriented businesses covering several industries. He retired from Starbucks after 21 years, where he led both a domestic business as president of North America and was the founding president of Starbucks International. During his tenure, he participated in the growth of the company from 28 stores to over 15,000 stores spanning five continents. He's got a great new book out. It's called The Magic Cup. Howard, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, Barry. Thanks for having me again.
So you talk about in the book that you really have to look at customers as human beings. What does that really mean?
Well, we get caught up in this word customer, and I kind of look at that word customer and I say, well, when you think about customer, those are people that have dollar bills glued to their forehead. And if you just do the right thing, you'll get that dollar bill. But when you see them as human beings, then you start focusing on serving them, whether they have a dollar bill or not. And it changes the whole dynamic, and you realize that you're there to serve human beings. You're not there to just get money. Money comes when you do the right things right, but that shouldn't be the driving force.
You know, you talk about in the book that you should have this philosophy of people first. Now, a lot of small business owners, they pay lip service to that, but how do you actually practice what you preach?
Well, you know, it starts with you. It's how do you treat yourself? Do you respect yourself? Do you care about yourself? Do you grow? Have you been growing as a human being? You know, the most important person you'll ever have to lead is you. And in small businesses, that's exactly the same. As the people that are running those businesses are leading those businesses, and they have to be experts at themselves. They have to know their strengths and their weaknesses. And then that moves on to this idea that what's their primary role? I mean, their primary role is basically to serve the people that work in their businesses. And in so doing, they help those people achieve their own personal goals in the journey of achieving the goals of the company. And when you put that together and with the understanding that we're here to serve the people that work with us, then those people latch on to the greater goals and the greater purposes of the organization and really want to accomplish something for the people that they're working for.
And that's interesting because, Howard, I think a lot of small business owners actually have it backward. They think since they're the owner of the company, the people are there to serve them, and that really affects their culture, doesn't it?
Absolutely. It should be totally the opposite of that, but that's a trap that we can fall into, particularly if, you know, early stage leaders, somebody that's just started a business and they believe everybody they hire is there to serve them and to accomplish their goals and to make them rich. That might be a nice outcome if that's what you want, but you don't really get it that way. You can't get it by forcing people to do the things you want them to do. They have to want to do it themselves, and so leadership is about helping people create the pathways to being part of an organization where they want to accomplish the goals of the organization as well as accomplish their own goals.
So, Howard, how do you test that to see if you've actually fallen to that trap? Because I really think it's a big problem for a lot of small business owners.
Ask your people. They'll tell you. You know, have conversations with your people. How are we doing? You know, are you connected to what we're doing? Ask them, what's our greater purpose? Why are you here? And then, you know, just constant dialogue. That's really what it's all about. It's exactly the same way that you do it at home with your significant other or your spouse. You check. You have a conversation. I have a question I ask my wife all the time. I ask, how are we doing? She's at the point now where she just laughs. right? But it's the beginning of a conversation, and that's what you want. So the question is to your people: how are we doing? And how are we doing? And how are we doing? And how am I doing for you? How do you feel you're doing in serving the organization? You know, are we getting where we think we should be going? And are you getting where you want to go?
We're talking with Howard Behar. He's the former president of Starbucks North America. He's got a great book out. It's called The Magic Cup. Howard, also, a lot of small business owners say, people are my greatest assets. And you don't think that's really a good word for it?
I think it's a bad word, because assets are things that you own. Assets are trucks and computers and buildings. Pretty much assets give you everything that you expect. You know, when you invest in a new truck, as long as you keep oil in it and you put gas in it and you take care of it, it does what it's supposed to do. People never give you what you expect. So
that's,
you know,
for sure.
People, they're not assets. They're human beings. And the idea is, when you recognize them as that, then you understand that we all have our frailties. We all make mistakes. We all do good things, you know. You know, there's one saying that we probably have all said one time or another, particularly if we've hired somebody, that it goes like this: we're going to get along just fine. Just remember, I don't like any surprises.
That's right.
Right? No surprises. And usually what bosses are meaning, you know, if something's wrong, I want to know early. But the truth of the matter is, if a new $1 million order came in and it was totally a surprise, they wouldn't mind that one at all.
That's right.
But remember that they go together. And sometimes there are surprises, and the people are not perfect. And that doesn't mean that you forgive it all the time, you know, with coaching and stuff like that. But the truth of the matter is, it does happen. And so we have to see people as human beings first, not assets.
You know, you also talk in the book that you actually have to care about people. And to me, again, a lot of small business owners said, yeah, sure, I care about people. But they really don't. They only care about them as much as they serve them. What are some good examples in your business experience where you really can show, hey, you know, I really care about you, and that's really going to go a long way with a team member?
Well, it starts with how the whole organization perceives you, in terms of what, not just what you say, but what do you do. So, you know, one of the greatest examples was when I was early on at Starbucks. One of our store managers called up and said he'd like to come talk with me, and Howard Schultz, who's the chairman of Starbucks. And I said, is there anything I can do to help you? Trying to head it off, figuring, well, I can handle it. Howard doesn't have to be involved. But he insisted, and so I called a meeting, and he came in, and we sat down, and there was a lot of small talk. And so I was kind of pushing him. His name was Jim. I said, so, Jim, what's up? And he just looked at both of us, and he said, I'm dying of AIDS. And, I mean, you know, the room went absolutely quiet. Jim had been there quite a long time at that point. And so Howard asked him a question. He said, so, Jim, what are you going to do about your health care once you're no longer working? And Jim said, well, there's some, you know, organizations that can help out. And Howard said, absolutely not. You know, you're part of our family. We will take care of your health care until you pass away. And then he said, how are you going to support yourself? And the same conversation took place, and Howard said, absolutely not. We will give you a monthly stipend until you're no longer with us. And I don't mean with us. I mean with us physically. And, you know, that was an example to me, early stage with the company, of what this place was going to be like. We were a small company. We were losing money at the time. Howard didn't know what it was going to cost. But, you know, a commitment was a commitment, and he was committed to people. That message went screaming through the organization.
And I think you could do anything for another human being
if they were in need.
And I think that's an important point, because a lot of people say, well, you know, Starbucks is big, they can afford it. But the point that you make is, you were a small company at that point.
Losing our ass. Excuse the expression.
Right. Exactly. So again, it was a way that you actually invested in people. And so tell us about how that actually affected the culture of the company after that.
Well, all of a sudden, you know, people started recognizing, managers started recognizing that they could take care of problems with their people. They could handle situations. You know, we realized that we were all there to serve each other. And so doing, we'd serve the people we call our customers, you know, those human beings. And so, you know, it's one continuous loop, right? When you reinforce taking care of another human being, whether it's making a sale or whether it's helping them with their health care because they're working in the company, whatever it happens to be, that reinforces the values of the organization. And that changes the dynamics of an organization. And you realize that all we are there is to serve. And in that process of serving, we make money.
And I want to make sure that people actually see this link, Howard, because if you serve your employees, they will do a better job of serving your customers, correct?
Correct. Absolutely.
Well, Howard, where can people get in touch with you and get a copy of the book?
Email hbhar@howardbehar.com, and you can go on Amazon or any of the booksellers.
And also mention your first book, because I thought that was amazing as well.
It's Not About the Coffee is the first book, and the second book is called The Magic Cup.
And what's the theme of the first book?
The first book is about leadership, primarily these kinds of things. It dealt in a more direct way, more like a leadership book. The second one is a fable that talks about it in a journey of a new leader.
Howard, thanks so much for being again on the show.
All right, thanks, Barry. Take care.
Coming up, what is the key to founding a startup? My next guest has actually done it over 50 times. His AM560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the Guardian Security Services Traffic Center.
Good morning, I'm Mary DeBangis with a look at your roadways. In Palos Park, there's a rollover accident on 131st Street at LaGrange Road, and that intersection is completely shut down. In Oak Lawn, westbound 111th is shut down, and that's just west of Central Avenue due to a police investigation from an earlier injury accident. Overnight road work closes the ramp from eastbound 390 to the westbound 290 extension until 7 a.m. A lot of delays out there. On the outbound side of the Edens, there's a crash off onto the left shoulder at Peterson. On the outbound Kennedy, the Ontario feeder ramp is closed until 7 a.m. Out on the Eisenhower, full on lane closures between Des Plaines Avenue and 5th Avenue, causing dramatic delays. Old Post Office out to Thorndale, a 40-minute ride. Today, mostly cloudy, high 76. Tomorrow, mostly sunny, high near 80. 63 right now. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
You know, the world didn't stop while you slept. Get the first look at what's happening around the world and here at home.
Scene of a plane crash in the remote French Alps.
With Don't This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Told CNN that he will follow the text of the law.
It's the breaking news and business information you'll need to start your day.
Here now with a look at some of the stories we're following.
Each weekday morning, starting at 4, right before Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan and Amy at 5 on AM 560. The Answer.
With Barry's 25 years in small business, he has finally discovered the magic formula to make more profit at any company. Business gurus make it sound so complicated, but it's really simple. The formula is P times P equals P. P times P equals P, where people multiplied by process means more profit. Learn how you can take a quantum leap in just 180 days to grow the profit in your business. Contact Barry at barry@maltz.com. That's barry@maltz.com.
Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Maltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company. Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Maltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
This is Roger Michalski from Eagle Financial Publications. Are you a dividend investor? If so, let me tell you about a website that has just about every resource that a dividend investor could ask for. It's called dividendinvestor.com. We just launched a new and improved version of it, and there's nothing else like it. When you log on to dividendinvestor.com, you'll find screening tools plus an all-star ranking system to help you find the best dividend opportunities. There's a scorecard to track the dividends in your very own portfolio, plus time-sensitive updates so you'll be the first to know when dividends go up or go down, and so many other features. Be my guest. Log on for free today at dividendinvestor.com. Set up a portfolio and see how easy it is to work the dividend calculator. And be sure to take the website tour to discover all the other great benefits. I'm convinced dividendinvestor.com will pay dividends to your bottom line. Go to dividendinvestor.com now. Dividendinvestor.com.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
Well, starting a business is not only hard, but it's a unique experience. I've started three businesses and really have only been wildly successful at one of them. But my next guest has done a lot better. Howard Love is founder or co-founder over 15 businesses and invests in over 50 startups, including two of my favorite, Trulia and Hotel Tonight. Howard, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Barry. Great to be here. Thanks so much for having me.
Well, you finally decided to put this all together in a book called The Startup J-Curve. Tell us what that book is about and what inspired you to do this.
Yeah, well, after 35 years, you know, 15 startups, 50 or 60 angel investments, I saw a fundamental pattern that pretty much every startup goes through, and it's going to be familiar to you as someone who's gone through a lot of these and others as well. Most people think the startup sort of starts off day one. You have this great idea you're all fired up about with, and the sort of line and curve goes straight up and to the right. But that's not what happens in you know, the experience I've seen. And the curve actually dips down for a while, gets tough, and then if you figure it out, then it starts going up and to the right. So, and it from my perspective, I saw six discrete stages that startups go through. So I wanted to get that message out there to help entrepreneurs get through the tough parts of startups. And so they can, you know, kind of get from start to success as fast as possible.
And this is very different than what they put in their business plan, right? Because every business plan, the financials look the same, Howard, right? In year five, we all get rich.
How true. And I think
you can use that one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of people, literally think, I don't know, maybe it's year two or three where we get some, you know, amazing buyout offer.
I think a lot of those of us who are experienced entrepreneurs, we can relate the whole idea of a J-curve, because I think that some people have some early on success with some early adopters, and then things really get tough, right?
Well, absolutely. And, you know, back to your point about the business plan, you know, no business plan survives contact with reality.
Right.
And you could say a sort of a correlating statement, which is, that almost no business plan ends up becoming the reality. So, for example, let's talk about a few products. Twitter actually began as Odeo.
Right.
So people think Twitter, oh, I want to be that. Well, you know what? Twitter was a hair's breadth away from failure. Odeo was a podcast service, and they realized it was going to be doomed when Apple debuted iTunes. So they had this wild and crazy idea, and a few of them went off and put Twitter together, what became Twitter, and people loved it, and it took off. Groupon, for example, originally started as a socially responsible fundraising site called The Point, and that wasn't working out so well, and they came up with this crazy idea about group buying. The Pinterest began as Tote. And this isn't a new phenomenon. William Wrigley, for example, used a free piece of chewing gum to help sell his primary products, which were soap and baking powder,
right,
until he realized that the chewing gum was more popular.
Right. So, Howard, is that the hardest part of the J-curve, is that you have some initial success, and then things don't work out so well, and you got to decide how you should morph your business or if you should morph it?
Well, that's exactly right, and so that's where it gets tough, and that's the dip of the J-curve, and I call that the long, cold winter or the valley of death, and it's where startups go to die unless they figure it out. And so,
kind of like a Game of Thrones kind of thing, right? The long winter's coming.
The long winter's coming. And more, so just to walk through the phases super quick, phase one is create, and I sort of term that dreams unburdened by reality. And then you have release, which is, it always ends up to be tougher than expected to get the darn thing out there, and then you release it, and that usually hits the market with a thud or crickets, or, you know, call it what you will. And then you have morph, which is what you just mentioned, and that's really where startups need to figure it out. And that's sort of after the, you know, Houston, we have a problem sort of statement, and that's where you try and see what is working about the product. And there usually is something, and that's the good news. There's usually something, some glimmer of hope. There's something that is resonating with the customers. It's rarely what you initially envisioned. But then the morphing process is to focus in on the one thing that is working and sort of chuck everything else. And it's tough. And And it's tough for people to accept that the initial idea isn't working. But there are tools, and that's part of, you know, what the book is to give you the tools to tell you what to do, when to do it, and how to do it, and how to overcome these challenges.
And to figure out parts that aren't working and really chuck the initial vision, the idea, that takes really checking your ego at the door, doesn't it?
Big time. It's very, very tough. It's tough, I think, emotionally, mentally, and everything else. And you know, Barry, making it twice as tough if you've raised money, which most startups have, is the fact that you've gone out and sold this. I mean, you sold the initial business plan. You told your friends and family, your angel investors, whoever else, that, you know, darn it, this is going to be the product, and it's going to take off, and it's going to be amazing. And so, yeah, the truth is you're in a very awkward situation, both with yourself, with your other employees and your coworkers, and also with the investors. But look, your back's up against the wall, because if you don't do it, you're going to die, and all those people are going to be terribly disappointed anyway. So, it's absolutely – it's tough.
Well, you've invested in a lot of businesses. What is really the difference between those that succeed and those that ultimately, which is most of them, fail?
The ones that succeed are incredibly persistent. They're resilient. They do kind of check their ego at the door in terms of the product, and yet they are absolutely committed to the vision, and they will do anything to make it happen. They're also very, very honest with themselves and realistic about what's going on, and so that they can make the changes they need to make quickly. Time is your enemy in a startup. As I know you know, Barry, and runway is everything. And, you know, those who succeed, they see it for what it is, they make the necessary adjustments, and they move on down the road. They can deal with the small failures in order to protect the enterprise, and those are the folks who make it.
Yeah, and I love what you say. They really endure. They come back from the very small failures, just as long as you don't go off the road. What changes are you really seeing today in the startup landscape?
Well, on the one hand, it's much easier to do a startup today than it was 10, 15, 20 years ago, and that's great. On the other hand, in some ways, it's almost too easy. But startups startups are being formed in almost every city. There are hundreds of accelerators out there just in the United States, and of course they're popping up in all around the world in far flung countries and cities. I was talking to some friends the other day. There were almost, if you sort of rewind the tape 10 years ago, 15 years ago, there were very few professors of entrepreneurship, for example, if any, maybe a handful over at Stanford. Today, there are thousands of professors of entrepreneurship. So startups are very consistent with our culture, our risk-taking and kind of go-for-it culture here in the U.S., and that's becoming true around the world. So it's really neat to see. Is it a little sort of overbaked right now, and in certain parts of the startup world, is it looking a little bit like a bubble, for example, with the unicorns? I'd say yes, but long term, the trend of startups and folks getting out there to do their own thing is up and to the right, and so it's really, really neat to see.
So the last question I got to ask you is, what is the favorite business that you ever invest in that you knew absolutely positively, Howard, this was going to succeed and it failed?
It is such an incredibly long list.
Honestly, just give us one.
Well, here's the wonky thing. The wonky thing is that, my venture partner is a guy named David Heeman, an amazing guy. And those ventures where we have invested at the very beginning and we have said, oh my God, we are so fired up, we're in this deal. We are literally high fiving. We're doing everything but popping the champagne. Right at the initial investment, almost all of those have failed. And the ones where we're like, oh, geez, this looks like just an absolutely crazy idea, and I'm not even sure, frankly, I get it, but we like this individual and we're going to back them. Those have actually proved to be the biggest successes.
Howard, I got to go. You got to invest in people. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you, Barry, so much for having me.
Coming up next, how do you run a company for both financial success and social good? And is that even possible? This is AM 560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
Marxists, socialists, and communists forget the government doesn't have any money.
The Dave Ramsey Show.
Except money it took from someone who is producing money. Government creates no money. The only way the government has money is if it took it from one of us. And so the only way that it would have money to give these people is if it took more from the other people. Thus, Marxism, communism.
Dave Ramsey, weeknights starting at 7. Presented by Wintrust Community Bank on AM 560. The Answer.
Fox News Radio, I'm Carmen Roberts. Firefighters making significant progress against the Blue Cut fire east of Los Angeles. It's now 73% contained.
I think this whole valley would have gone up had they not put up a battle right here and stopped the fire. Because you can see the hot spots where it just jumped and it skipped. And it could have been a lot worse than it was.
Diane Holmes, one of the lucky ones. Her house spared from the flames. At least 105 others were not. A man arrested in Alabama and the murders of five people in the town of Citronelle. Mobile County detective describes the scene.
It's a very, very gruesome scene. It's awful.
Deputies say the suspect, Derek Dearman, confessed to the murders after surrendering, in Mississippi. No word on a motive or method. Fox News, we report, you decide.
Stuck in traffic? We've got the answer. From the Guardian Security Services Traffic Center.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Mary DeBadges with a look at your roadways. In Palos Park, 131st Street is blocked at LaGrange Road because of a rollover accident. In Oak Lawn, westbound 111th Street remains blocked just west of Central as crash scene investigators remain on the scene from an earlier bicycle accident. Out on the Edens at Peterson, a crash off onto the left shoulder. Eisenhower bumper to bumper. Accident off onto the shoulder right around Des Plaines Avenue. And they're doing full-on 15-minute lane closures at Des Plaines Avenue as well. 40 minutes out to Thorndale. This report is brought to you by Alpha Money Ford in Melrose Park. Stop. Before you buy your new car, you must visit Alpha Money Ford now. Truckloads of new cars and trucks have just arrived, and everything is priced to sell quickly. Alpha Money Ford is at 25th and North Avenue in Melrose Park. Today, partly cloudy skies and a high of 76. Currently 63 downtown. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before for just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications. Thinking of starting your own business? Get on board for a crazy ride. Be the first person to tweet Barry at Barry Moltz and get a free copy of his book, You Need to Be a Little Crazy, The Truth About Starting and Growing Your Own Business. You will need the company.
Are you stuck? Is this the year you finally grow your business and make more money? During Barry's many years of running his own company, he had to deal with the challenges of a business that just wasn't going anywhere. It was a painful realization. His business had flatlined, and he had no idea how to breathe new life into it. It was especially difficult for Barry since his customers were not getting the service he was so passionate about delivering. Second, he wasn't making any money. Finally, his business was sucking the life out of him. Do any of these sound familiar? Your sales won't budge in spite of your best efforts. You have few new leads for customers coming in and existing customers fading away. You're burned out and completely exhausted. It's no longer fun and your family suffers as well. If you're one of the millions of small business owners facing these problems every year, Barry has the answer. Check out BarryMoltz.com/unstuck to subscribe to his six-part video series.
I love talking about my Solatube. It's so simple and genius. Hi, Amy Jacobson here to tell you that in only 2 hours, it transformed my home's darkest room. This amazing Solatube technology is a simple little roof dome to capture sunlight, plus super reflective tubing to transfer the sunlight into brilliant daylight that fills your room. There are beautiful options to choose from, and it's so affordable. Prices start under $800. The natural lighting truly brightened my bathroom. It seems so much larger now. I recommend you brighten your home with natural light using Solatube daylighting systems. Call my friend Katie at Chicago Skylight Pros, a Solatube premier dealer, for your consultation at 844-789-SHINE. Mention me and receive $75 off your first light. That's 844-789-SHINE, or visit chicagoskylightpros.com to view my video and see the amazing before and after pics. chicagoskylightpros.com.
Now, back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560. The Answer. Once again, here's Barry Maltz.
Well, as we talked a lot about on this show, starting a business for financial success is hard. But starting it for financial success and social good is nearly impossible in my book. But my next guest did just that. Mark Rampolla is the co-founder and managing partner of Power Plant Ventures. He was the founder and CEO of Zico Beverages and Zico Coconut Water from 2004 and 2013 when it was purchased by the Coca-Cola Company. Mark, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Barry. Great to be with you.
I can't help think that, you know, you started your career as a Peace Corps volunteer. How did that influence you to get interested in doing not only a business for success, financial success, but for social good?
Well, it did in a big way. I mean, first of all, it was just a fun, exciting experience to see a different part of the world and see the way different people live. And that's when I first came in touch with coconut water. And beyond that, it made me really understand and think about the role that business can play in the world, small business, medium-sized business, and the impact it can make on people's lives. So, yeah, that's definitely something that I carried through with me into starting Zico.
Now, a lot of small business owners will say, listen, I'm having a hard enough time being successful financially. I can't worry about this social good stuff. What do you say to that?
Yeah, it's a good point, and I certainly understand why people would be anxious about that. What I realize, and I've seen this again and again in the dozens of businesses I've invested in successfully, is the business owners that find a way to integrate purpose into their DNA and a real passion and commitment for making an impact are actually the ones that break through in today's world, because it is so competitive, it is so difficult to gain the interest of consumers or investors or employees. I actually find that social purpose is a differentiating factor that helps entrepreneurs break through and succeed and win financially in the end as well.
So you're really defining social good as a little bit more broadly. It's just not saving the rainforest, right?
No, not a bit. Not a bit, Barry. I think there are so many ways that different businesses make an impact in everything they do, right? Bringing jobs to their communities, bringing goods and services to customers. But I think thinking through that business in a way that it's more than about just making money and really getting clear about what that impact is, I find helps entrepreneurs really give the passion and commitment and persistence they need to see it through, but also gets consumers excited, right? Everybody wants to be part of a mission, not just a business. And so to the extent that a business owner really defines that well, it can be their existing business, but just better defined, I think helps them break through.
Yeah, and I think it also helps the team to stay together and keep going if they feel they have a purpose, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. I've seen it again and again, the ability to attract great talent and keep people engaged. Because, look, there may be times that people need to take pay cuts or work extra hours. And if they're doing it just to put more money in the owner's pockets, yeah, I think the commitment's not quite there. But if they feel like they're making an impact in the world, even if it's just their local community or their customer base, I find that employees are ready to go to the mat and do whatever it takes to succeed.
So, Mark, how did you articulate really the social good that Zico Coconut Water was trying to accomplish?
Yeah, well, for us, there were really two main points to that. The first was that we wanted to bring a healthy, natural beverage to consumers across the world. We recognize that, you know, most of the sugary soft drinks and sodas that are available aren't really that healthy, and they're not contributing to
except
people
for Coca-Cola,
healthy.
Right?
Well, hey, let's we could argue that. We could argue that. But hey, my view was, hey, let's help Coke figure out how to make millions or billions selling something healthy, you know? And that's something that got my employees really, really excited because they felt like they were part of a bigger mission. The second piece was we felt like we were bringing jobs and desperately needed economic development to these countries that grow coconuts. The 85 countries that grow coconuts around the world are pretty poor and all need additional economic activity and jobs. So that's something that got us all excited. We felt like we woke up every day with a mission and a commitment to do something more than just making money to really make an impact in the world.
Well, last question I have for you. One of the big issues in this presidential election is really for jobs to stay here in America. How can this help?
Yeah, that's a great point, Barry. And I do talk about this in my book somewhat is, look, I think although, you know, a good bit of what we did was sourcing internationally, I now am more excited than ever about investing in businesses and seeing businesses that create jobs here in the U.S. And it's happening. I mean, I'm amazed to see the revolution that's happening with local manufacturing, particularly in the food space, but also across many industries, local service businesses. I think entrepreneurs are the ones that are going to make a massive contribution to this, and I'm seeing it happen in big cities. So personally, I'm making big bets on businesses in L.A. and Dallas and other cities that are employing, you know, dozens of people, collectively hundreds of people, and I think that's the wave we're going to see in the future.
Where do you think these sectors of new jobs are really going to come from? Because a lot of the manufacturing jobs have already gone overseas because of less expensive labor. Where do you think the uptick will be?
Well, I'll tell you one area, Barry, that I'm particularly excited about, and that's food. I mean, we have a massive, you know, $1.4 trillion U.S. food business. And the reality is, as consumers start to look for high-value, natural, healthy products, man, they got to be made locally, right? If they're chilled, if they're really high quality, people don't want to buy their food processed in China. They want to find it. It's made locally here in the U.S. So I'm seeing more and more businesses and creating lots of jobs in food, manufacturing, processing, distribution, service. And I think that's an area that's not going to go away.
I would agree.
We can't export our food.
Mark, real quick, give us the title of the book and where people can get a copy of it.
Yeah, it's called High Hanging Fruit, and you can get it at your favorite bookseller, Amazon.com, or any others. And I think it's particularly appropriate for entrepreneurs at any stage of their business to really get clarity on what they want out of life.
Mark, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thanks, Barry. Appreciate it.
Coming up next, how to get your employees more engaged. And guess what? It doesn't come from micromanaging them. This is AM 560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
How can you get from here to there? We've got the answer from the Guardian Security Services Traffic Center.
Good Sunday morning. I'm Mary DeBadges with a look at your roadways. In Palos Park, 131st Street, blocked at LaGrange with a rollover accident. In Oak Lawn, an earlier accident investigation site has westbound 111th blocked between Manfield and Mayfield, which is just west of Central. Now, if you're outbound on the Edens, there's a crash at Peterson off onto the right shoulder. Kennedy, 20 minutes into and out of the airport. Outbound Ontario feeder closed. Express lanes closed until 6 a.m. Outbound Eisenhower, bumper-to-bumper Harlem out to 1st Avenue, mixed into Desplaines Avenue. A crash off onto the right shoulder and a stall in the center lane. Plus, they also have barricades set up, and they're doing full 15-minute periodic lane closures until 7 a.m. Post office to Mannheim, 2538 out to Thorndale. Today, mostly cloudy, high 76. For tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 80. 63 downtown. Next update in 15 minutes on AM 560, The Answer.
You've already upgraded your cell phone to a smart device, which lets you use the internet to be more productive on the go. But what about your desk phone? Nextiva is a smart business phone system in the cloud. With a simple setup through an internet connection, you can soon have access to your office communications wherever you are. Stay seamlessly connected with clients and stay more mobile than ever before for just one low monthly cost. Give your business more than just a basic desk phone. Visit Nextiva.com or call 800-799-0600 to learn more today. Nextiva. Simplifying your business communications. Get a copy of Barry's new book, BAM, where he shows how social media and our self-service world has rewritten all the rules of customer service. The best marketing now is BAM, good customer service. Be the first to tweet Barry at Barry Moult and get a free copy of the book.
For decades, maybe even centuries, entrepreneurs have been recognized for being the biggest player in the industry. But no one recognizes the folks who have the courage to challenge industry norms. Well, that's what the Rule Breaker Awards is about. And you can vote for the biggest Rule Breaker right now. Go to RuleBreakerAwards.com. That's RuleBreakerAwards.com to vote for the entrepreneur you think is the biggest Rule Breaker. That's RuleBreakerAwards.com.
With Barry's 25 years in small business, he has finally discovered the magic formula to make more profit at any company. Business gurus make it sound so complicated, but it's really simple. The formula is P times P equals P. P times P equals P, where people multiplied by process means more profit. Learn how you can take a quantum leap in just 180 days to grow the profit in your business. Contact Barry at barry@maltz.com. That's barry@maltz.com.
Stick around and get your small business unstuck. More of Business Insanity Talk Radio with Barry Maltz. Now on AM 560, The Answer.
A lot of managers think that in order to be a good leader, they have to be very hands-on. My next guest believes that the exact opposite is true. The more you manage engagement, the less engagement you actually get. As the founder of Juice, Inc., Brady Wilson functions as a human energy architect, working with leaders to build the conditions in which innovation, value creation, and unforgettable customer experiences can flourish. Brady's the author of four books. His latest is called Beyond Engagement. He helps leaders step into life's grittiest tensions, inspiring them to create a sustained approach to positive change. He worked with such companies as 20th Century Fox, American Express, Pfizer, and Yum! Brands. Brady, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you, Barry.
I love how that sounds, a human energy architect, an HEA.
Yes, exactly.
So tell us why, because it's really counterintuitive, I think, for a lot of new managers, why the more you try to engage, the more disengagement you actually produce.
Well, it really comes down to people's definition of engagement today. I don't think we ever intended it to be this way. But what it is now in the employee's mind and the regular manager's mind, engagement is commitment, dedication, loyalty, come in early, stay late. So it really is all about effort. But what's missing from the definition is resilience and passion and enthusiasm and being able to get into a state of flow where you lose track of time. So all of that is around energy. And so if we try to manage engagement, what we get is people who are dedicated but depleted. We get people who are engaged, but they're exhausted. And we are seeing, Barry, so much exhaustion in the workplace. It is unbelievable what it's producing.
So I think all the small business owners agree with you. So what's the alternative? What should a leader do instead?
Well, when we step into a different conversation around how do we partner together to manage your energy, it takes a stigma right off. Because if a manager is trying to say, you know what, let's talk about engagement, immediately there's a sense of judgment. There's a sense of, do you mean I'm not working hard enough? You don't see me coming in early and staying late? If we say, no, let's talk about building the conditions together where you can be energized day in and day out and have energy left over at the end of the day for your family, that changes the game. If you get energy, you'll get engagement too. But the other is not true.
But it sounds a little bit woo-woo if I sit down with my employee and I say, well, listen, I don't really want to talk about the job you're doing. I want to talk about your energy.
Well, you know what? It's really interesting because we teach managers and leaders how to make the linkage between the energized brain and your ability to make great decisions, your ability to focus in the midst of distractions, your ability to connect the dots, your ability to create an unforgettable customer experience. If you don't have that, you know, what's interesting is when a person is low on energy, the first thing they lose is their executive function, mm-hmm. which is command central, the ability to do all those things that I just mentioned. So you can have really good people, talented, et cetera, but if they can be engaged, but if they're low on energy, we lose executive function.
Now, one thing you also talk about in the book is that leaders really have to go from parenting to partnering. And I think that a lot of leaders, they really do try to be a parent because that's one of the models they have in their lives.
Yeah. And, you know, they don't get up in the morning, they're eating their cornflakes thinking, how do I make my people feel like children? It's well-intended. But we're trying to change the social contract, Barry, from the employee who says, I'll come in for 8 hours a day, and you give me a salary and create this unbelievably engaged environment for me. We actually believe that employees need to own their own engagement. So if managers shift from, I need to be the one who fixes the engagement scores, I need to be the cheerleader, the handholder, the social convener, the recognition meister, all of those things aren't sustainable. No manager can sustain that type of behavior. But if they partner with employees to say, let's build these conditions together in our team where people can have a bit more energy, that's sustainable.
So is that really the key to engagement, is try to partner with the employee to see exactly what they want and where it intersects with what the company wants?
That's exactly. It's the what they want, the intersection with what the company, the team wants, and the intersection with what the customer needs. There's a beautiful intersection there that has all sorts of tensions around it. But the beauty of tension is that it's got energy right inside of it. Wherever you have tension, you have energy latent inside of it. So it's just, how do we step into those conversations skillfully in a partnering mindset to pull out the innovative solutions that really will energize everybody, the customer, the team, the employee, and the manager.
You know, it's funny because a lot of small business owners, what they do is say, well, you know, I know what the my employees want because I always survey them.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting because we see leaders who get survey results and they say, okay, it's clear we need to have a better recognition system, or we need a better performance evaluation system. And often what they implement misses the mark by a country mile in terms of the employee's lived experience at work. So we take a very highly differentiated, highly nuanced approach and say, let's just have a conversation with the employee and find out what is it over the last 3 months that's really energized you at work? And what is it that's depleted you? And how can you and I partner together to get a little bit less of the depletion, a little bit more of the energy? And you come out with surgical solutions that save you a massive amount of money.
So, Brady, where can people get in touch with you and get a copy of the book, Beyond Engagement?
Yeah, come to www.juiceinc.com, and we got some free stuff there. People can download a free copy of the latest book. There's a white paper that they can bring to their senior teams and produce a lot of dialogue there. But if they come to that www.juiceinc.com, they can learn about what we're doing.
Brady, thanks so much for being on the show.
Barry, thank you for your hosting.
Coming up next, we're going to have the key to how to get engagement, actual engagement, on Facebook. This is AM 560 The Answer. We'll be right back.
For decades, maybe even centuries, entrepreneurs have been recognized for being the biggest player in the industry. But no one recognizes the folks who have the courage to challenge industry norms. Well, that's what the Rule Breaker Awards is about. And you can vote for the biggest rule breaker right now. Go to rulebreakerawards.com. That's rulebreakerawards.com to vote for the entrepreneur you think is the biggest rule breaker. That's rulebreakerawards.com.
The biggest trap business owners face is that they are continually flip-flopping their time between working for customers and selling to find new business. As a result, when you are doing the work, the sales activity slows
to a crawl.
This double helix trap keeps businesses struggling for years. Learn the 7 strategies for breaking this trap. Contact Barry at barry@barrymoltz.com.
Ah, the sounds of summer from your very own pool and spa is brought to you by All Seasons Pools, Spas, and Outdoor Living. All Seasons Pools and Spas begins from the ground up with creative custom design, expert pool construction, and hardscaping, and then finishes with complete maintenance and care, leaving you to enjoy the ah of summer. As you soak up the sun poolside, imagine a fire pit, outdoor kitchen, or pergola. All Seasons Pool and Spa will turn your boring backyard into a vacation paradise. No need to go off the deep end. Relax knowing that for over 60 years, All Seasons Pools and Spas has been making a splash in your neighborhood. Visit their showroom and store for a complete selection of pool, spa, robotic pool cleaners, and premium barbecue and grill islands. A trained staff is on hand to provide water testing, salt and chlorine products, and advice for servicing your pool. All Seasons Pool and Spa and Outdoor Living, 135th Street in Orland Park, or resortlivingathome.com. That's resortlivingathome.com.
Now,
back to Business Insanity Talk Radio. It's time to get your small business unstuck on AM 560. The Answer. Once again, here's Barry Maltz.
A lot of small business owners are trying to figure out exactly how to engage customers on Facebook. Here to show us the way is Rachel Durkin. She's the founder and owner of Paradigm Marketing and Design, which provides comprehensive marketing services, including strategy development and execution and creative solutions. Rachel, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So a lot of people think that engaging clients or customers or prospects on Facebook means just putting posts on there. What does it really mean, and what's the key to success?
Sure. So Facebook advertising or marketing, really like any social media marketing, needs to be done in coordination with a traditional ongoing marketing strategy. So a lot of my clients will come to me and say, I need social media marketing or I need Facebook marketing, and they assume that they're going to get an immediate and direct return on investment from just posting on Facebook. And really, you have to do a lot more than that. You have to create what's called a touch process. And when I say touch process, I mean engaging with your consumers through different mediums and communication outlets. And on average, depending on industry, it can take 7 to 9 touches to reach your target audience. And a touch can be a salesperson talking to them, an email communication, them checking out your website, and then, of course, Facebook marketing. So it's all about engagement and driving consumers to the next touch with a consistent and cohesive message.
So Rachel, where does it start? Can it start on Facebook, or it has to really start offline to be most successful?
No, it can absolutely start on Facebook. It really depends on your industry and how you're going to use Facebook. So we have a lot of B2C consumers who have great products, especially in like the health and wellness area. And Facebook is a great platform to create relationships with a wide variety of target audiences that you're not already connected to. For B2B consumers, where you have professional services, Facebook is really used more to strengthen current relationships, show your expertise, and create engagement with customers that already have some sort of connection to you.
So if I'm a small business owner, and let's say I don't have any in-person salespeople, I do it all over the web, mm-hmm. can multiple touch points be an email to them, Facebook, Twitter, my website? Can that work?
Absolutely. Yeah, you want to – and the whole point is to drive consumers in and then back out again. And I always say your website is the foundation because you're trying to drive traffic in and out. And you want to create content that is going to be relevant to your audience. So we have what we call the 80-20 rule when you're posting on Facebook, where 80% of the time you're posting about something that is interesting to them. So education, information, fun topics, contests, giveaways, things that they enjoy. And then 20% of the time can be a call to action like a sale or a promotion that you're running in which you're going to drive them to your website.
So, Rachel, we've got about 30 seconds left. What is really the key to actually getting a prospect customer to see what you posted in their Facebook feed?
So it's all about the algorithm. The best way for – actually, Facebook recently changed the algorithm so that business pages don't show up as much as families and friends do. And the best way for a business owner to combat that is to really use their personal page to engage customers and share things that are happening on the business page. And you can always boost your posts and use advertising to ensure that it comes up. Also, it's quality over quantity. So a lot of my clients will say, oh, I have 1,000 likes or I have 1,000 people who like my page. But really, you want to make sure that the people who like your page are engaged with what you're saying. And engagement is when they share, comment, or like something that you're doing or a post that you've put out. And that can cause the post to come up more on news feeds than just having multiple likes on your page.
Rachel, thanks for being on the show. If you want to read Rachel, it's www.paradigm, P-A-R-A-D-I-G-M, marketinganddesign.com. Rachel, thanks so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
And thanks all of you for joining this week's radio show, which is sponsored by Nextiva. I want to thank our staff, our booking producer, Sarah Schaffern, our in-studio producer, Debbie Schreiner. If you're serious about getting your business unstuck, give me a call, 773-837-8250, or email me at barry@maltz.com. Remember, love everyone, trust a few, and paddle your own canoe. Have a profitable and passionate week.
You can find Barry on the web at barrymaltz.com. You've been listening to Business Insanity Talk Radio.
If you're fortunate enough to have an